What's going on, I-65 bound from Boilermaker Nation down to Indianapolis. It's the Triple Option back in studios this week. Blair, Tyler, and Harold. We're going to start transitioning here. We got high school football wrapping up the playoffs. We got Purdue football near the end of their season. We're going to start moving towards Purdue basketball, and we're going to start throwing in some Pacers and Colts too. But we're going to start off the way we always do, high school football. West Lafayette wins again, 25-21, their closest game this playoffs, 4 points there over Fort Wayne Concordia. And interesting stat, I believe Maurice Woodard had something like 40 carries for 179 yards and 3 touchdowns, and the quarterback was like 4 for 11 for like 70 yards, and one of them came on a 56-yard touchdown pass. So does that, Pops, make you worry a little bit, or maybe just, well, quarterback had an off night, but they're so balanced that it didn't really matter?
Well, it would all, you could argue the weather, but I suggest that maybe Concordia, you know, appears to be pretty good, is a good team too. I don't think they're anything to take for granted, so despite what appeared to be more of a balanced offense this year, they ran into a pretty good team and won. It's a little bit closer than I thought, but, you know, when you get to this point, a win is a win, I guess. I just, looking ahead, I'm not for sure what to think going forward. So you win, you're in the semi-state. I think we all expected them to at least get to the semi-state, but can you win on the road in the semi-state going up against the number one team?
Well, what are your thoughts there?
I don't know. It's not going to be easy. I'm going to take Andrian. They're number one for a reason. I can't say I know the schedule, but I think that this game here with going up against a quality opponent, and now they have faced quality opponents, but going up, usually all the Fort Wayne teams are pretty good, and that's where Concordia's based, but it had to throw some red flags up with the passing game, so I think that is a concern, and at some point they're going to run into a team that's going to be able to stop Woodard. And when that happens, I don't know what they're going to do. And I think that's probably a distinct possibility going up to Gary to play on Gary Andrian.
Quick question, because Woodard's had such a ridiculous season, he's pretty much carried West Lafayette. Is it somebody that Purdue should look at, especially since Hazel said he likes to recruit, wants to recruit more in the state?
Yeah, I mean, if they think he's got enough, athleticism, I think that's, Purdue is in need of athleticism, but sure, I mean, why not? I mean, he's it's like he's been running for 150, 200 yards every game, so, yeah, I think you probably need to. Now, whether that, you know, works out to where he's going to be a contributor or just somebody that just is on their 85-man roster with a scholarship, I don't know. But, yeah, I think you need to at least do your due diligence and take a look at him and take a look at the film and see if he could translate into college football.
All right, well, that's going to do it. I mean, we only have one high school team left. They have 2 games max. So let's move over to Purdue football. Kind of a decent amount to talk about. Pops and I watched the entire game from beginning to end. And I guess to start with, Pops, let's just get your overall impressions. Are you a little more pleased with the team? Are you still disappointed?
I actually saw a semblance of an offense yesterday, and we noted some of the changes early, and then it looks like they went back to the old traditional playbook that they seem to constantly run. And then towards the end of the first half, they had a nice drive, and then come out, and then they started panning over, and it looks like Daryl Hazel's calling plays. And again, in the second half, they had a nice drive, and you saw some things you liked. Boy, the defense, I don't know if they could tackle the three of us yesterday. It was horrid.
It was bad.
I don't know if this change to 3-4 is going to work. And so overall impressions, yeah, it looked better, but they still get blown out. I mean, you know, even trying to take some positives out of what you saw in the offense, the defense decided, you know, granted, I'm sure Penn State is bigger on the lines. It certainly looked like it because Purdue couldn't handle them either way, but you still lost by 24, and that's disappointing, and you're headed to maybe a 2-win season, maybe. I mean, can they beat Illinois? Can they beat Indiana? I don't know. You're still looking at one of the worst seasons that this area has seen in a long time, probably since Jim Coletto was here prior to, that's the dark ages, prior to Joe Tiller showing up. So I saw some good things, but yet it's balanced by the fact I saw some really ugly things.
All right, well, let's break that down after we get Tyler's quick impressions. Tyler, what are your impressions of the Penn State-Purdue game?
This is the first game where they were really having a shot. After halftime, they were still in the game and were still fighting for it once it was 28-21. This is the first game they've actually been competitive that late, probably since Notre Dame. And the offense, I mean, it sounded like Ettling was getting better in that while the defense could tackle, but they were causing problems for Hackenberg by forcing some turnovers.
They did do that. I think the final tally was 3-2. All right, Pops, let's break this down because you and I watched the entire game from beginning. Let's start with the offense. One of the things I noticed is the accuracy, especially one of the things that we saw that we liked was they were using a quick pass offense. And the issue is that they kept throwing passes into the flat again and again, and eventually you're just going to suck the defense up. So that was an issue. But even on those short, like 5 yards, not even down the field, but just like 5 yards out, he couldn't hit receivers. He couldn't lead them. He kept throwing it behind him. And I don't know if maybe some of those passes you throw it behind him as a protection thing. Maybe that's how it's schemed up. But I don't think he's supposed to throw it behind him on all of those passes.
Well, no. I mean, early you saw some quick hitters and some slants that were working. It looked like the kind of a three-step drops where you got the ball up because the offensive line just could not protect for more than maybe you could literally count 1,000, 2,000. He had to get it out by three because Penn State was on him. I liked the quick hitters early on. Maybe some of the passes in the flat or those bubble screens were working. And it seems like after that they went back to the old traditional playbook, which drives me crazy. And then towards the end of the half, they went to it. And yeah, and then after a while, you keep throwing passes in the flat or they constantly keep throwing those bubble screens, the defense is going to figure it out. I mean, what I did like is Ettling is nimble, and he was able to get some yards and run when it's there, and that's what you need to do. You can't just sit back and throw it. It looks like they decided also in the first half that instead of just constantly keep banging their head against the wall and picking up a half yard here, a yard there, or a loss there running the ball, that they were just literally throwing it. It reminds me kind of the idea of the West Coast offense, which is kind of not abandon the run, but, you know, we're going to run by just dumping off, getting short passing yards. It's effectively the same thing. You get 3 or 4 yards on this pass, 3 or 4 yards on that pass. It's like a couple of runs. Yeah, I have questions about Ettling's accuracy. Obviously, not all the time you're going to lead him, but when the guy is wide open, if you want to get yards after the catch, which is a key stat in football now, you got to lead the guy. And he was throwing the ball behind receivers. And one thing that stood out to me is we were watching his pick. He was on the far hash. He was throwing it out. And the problem is a pass like that, you got to throw it on a rope. And it just looked like a looped. It wasn't a tight spiral. And it was just an easy pick. And if you don't get it out fast enough, you give the cornerback enough time to react to get back in position and intercept the ball. So between his arm strength, which, you know, it's not necessarily something you have to be a good quarterback, but more so is accuracy. I question that. And then it seems like in some key situations on 3rd and 10, he was locking on Yancey.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
He threw one into double coverage. It was picked. And it was when there was still someone in the game, 38-21, he threw one to Yancey in triple coverage. Yeah. I mean, you know, raise your hand if you've seen it being a Bears fan, because I've just seen that crap too much. You know, it's just... There's some good things I saw out of him. I like the fact that Hazel took over the play calling because, frankly, I mean, how many times could you watch the offense is bad? So I like that. And, you know, the touchdown he ran, he looked like a read option. You know, obviously, if Ettling can run, put it in. And you got enough running backs, run some read option, but you could also pass out of it, okay? So good things, but, you know, Ettling's a freshman, and he's got a learning curve, so we'll just see what they do against Illinois.
Is that something you think you saw there, that when they got late after losing 7 in a row, that maybe Ettling specifically, but the team started to feel some pressure like, holy cow, it's only 31-28, and it's halfway through the third quarter at Penn State. We shouldn't be in this position. Because like you said, they went back to the playbook, and it just seemed like, and granted, the offensive line couldn't pass block, like you said, but it looked like he got a little more antsy in the pocket.
That's possible. I mean, you know, I mean, playing at Penn State is one of those unnerving type things because it's like 108,000 people there that are on you. And, you know, and he's a freshman. And I mean, this is the biggest game. Well, I don't know. It's one of the tougher places to play at. So it's possible that he just got a little bit of yips in him. And, you know, in those third downs, he just got him pressed or made or pushed something or made a decision he wouldn't have made. But it's a learning curve. You know, and we talked about being under duress and pressure. I made this example. You know, this is a perfect example of testing him, how he handles the pressure at Penn State with the crowd and everything. Granted, they're not you know, Penn State is not what they were 4 or 5 years ago, but it's still not easy to go there and play. But again, he's a freshman. This is a learning curve that you got to go through. So we'll see how it translates to next week.
Tyler, what do you think about next week? Illinois, was it something like 35-0 at half to Ohio State, and then it was 35-21. I think the final score is like 60-something.
60-35.
60-35. That's a lot more respectable than it looked. Purdue gets them at home. Give them a chance?
I give them a chance on the fact that they said that during the broadcast yesterday for the game, they were saying that Purdue has faced three, I think, out of the top 10 defenses in the country or some. They played extremely good defenses, and the fact that IU and Illinois are both above 100, I think it's either in total or in passing defense. So I think they're saying, if anything, it should be, you should see some fireworks. Whether it goes Purdue's way or not is debatable, but there's going to be some amount of scoring, maybe like the Penn State game, where you're going to see scoring, and, you know, Purdue may lose like 41-27 or something like that, but you'll see them fight for it. So I think they'll at least be in the game in the third quarter.
Well, what do you think about that, Pops? You made a joke last week that IU's the defense that can't stop anybody versus the Purdue offense that can't score. You got IU and Illinois left. They both struggle to put apparently 11 guys on the defensive side.
I would kind of sit there thinking, you know, the phrase usually is the irresistible object versus the immovable force, but what's the polar opposite of two bads? I can't think of one, but I will say that from what I saw yesterday, it was able to put up 21 points, which, you know, that's not a big deal, but around here, it's kind of like you want to stop and almost have a parade. We scored 3 touchdowns in a game, but if Ettling plays like he did, the offense plays like they did, and Hazel is committed to the play calling and tells John Shoup, just stay home, kind of like what happened last year when the offensive coordinator hurt his back.
Yeah.
And they said, just, you know, you could take some extra time. We got this. If Shoup, just tell Shoup he could go home and go on his Thanksgiving vacation already. Purdue should be in these games. Can they win? That's going to be on Ettling, because I think, in as much as, you know, the running game kind of was where you thought this is, I think obviously with Ettling, you're going to have to pass to win this. So, I mean, he'll have chances, or if he's going to grow, or if you see some progression, you'd like to think that one of these games he can win on his arm. Because I think both of these games could be one where the scoreboards could just blow up, because it could be like a Denver game versus the Dallas, where it was just constantly back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. But can Ettling keep playing and being productive to make that close and also give them a chance to win? Because even though I don't think beating Illinois or Indiana is the signature win, I think at this point you'll take anything.
Right. Well, what do you think about, I know, you know, we're a bit disappointed in the amount of points given up, but the defense seems to continually generate some turnovers. Is in a team, obviously Illinois' offense isn't bad and IU's is fairly good. Is the defense kind of a bit of an advantage there? Because even yesterday, Purdue forces 2 Penn State turnovers. It seems like they've been able to force turnovers in games. They give up a lot of points, and we've talked about it. We think a factor, not a big factor, because they're obviously not world beaters, but a factor is that the offense just struggles to stay on the field consistently. Now, I guess you can... Yesterday, I don't know if you can really make an excuse for them, because they couldn't stop Penn State from running the ball. They could left, right, and center. Didn't matter. It was going to be 5 yards at least.
Well, I mean, you know, they can generate turnovers, but you're also going against yet another freshman quarterback. So was it just part of Hackenberg's growing that he made some mistakes? Possible. But, you know, when they can line up and just basically get 5 yards a pop on a running game, and then as the second quarter and third quarter progresses, you're getting 7 and 8, 9 and 10. It's just a matter of time before the Purdue defense gets worn out. I mean, they're probably tired already, just because they've been on the field more, and you're going up against a big Penn State offensive line. They just warm out. I don't think that helped. And I'm not for sure if this 3-4 thing is working out. It's the problem is, to run it effectively, you have to have, you know, certain players. Specifically, you have to have enough linebackers who are athletic enough, and put a couple at the outside who can rush, and you also have to have a nose guard that can basically clog up the middle. I'm just not sure what Purdue has. I just say throw caution to the wind, blitz more, you know, zone blitz more. I really like the fake punt. I want to see more of it because, I mean, it's 1-8, and I was yelling at the TV when they had 4th-and-1 at the 27, and it's what, they're down 21-something. I'm like, it's your guy 1-8. How could it get any worse? Go for it.
Right.
Seriously, I mean, not all the time. I don't mean literally, but they're in a situation like this, I would have went for it. I mean, what's it going to hurt? You know, I mean, and it looked like when they lined up, they just scored a touchdown, you remember, and they lined up to appear, looked like the kick on a off on sides. You're like, my first thought was, you know what? They just scored. The offense is feeling, get the ball back. So
I agree with that one.
The wind, the wind ruined it.
You know, I just want to see, I mean, I was even calling for the annexation of Puerto Rico. Just run fake plays. Not all the time, but do something, will you?
I mean, I agree with him. I when I was listening, they're like, well, could they run the, they're like outside, they're like, I don't know. I'd be like, who, does it look like you're, is anyone on that team saying, we're going to get this win? No, just go for it. Try, you know, I'm, you know, maybe I'll go a little further and say try more fake punts. I mean, but what do you got to lose? It doesn't work and you still lose. You're in the same boat, but at least you gave it, at least you could say, we tried everything. We didn't just go 3 downs and punt it away going, oh, well, it was a fair shot. You said 4th down, we're going to throw whatever we got at you.
I agree, and I think on defense, I would literally send everybody. I mean,
well, didn't we saw a little bit of that yesterday, and it didn't matter. Hackenberg was still able to drop back, throw it to a tight end, then miss the Purdue misses 2 tackles, and the guy runs for 60 yards.
Well, I mean, I would blitz more. I mean, and maybe this is a bad example to use against a Penn State team that's just better on both lines, but against Illinois, Indiana.
Oh, yeah, I'd agree.
Send the house. I mean, I get just line up, get everybody out of the stands, get the water boy, the managers, just blitz and just send them because, you know, let's win. Let's be aggressive. If you're going to go down, let's go down swinging. And let's be aggressive on offense. Let's go aggressive on defense. I mean, run it out of the gun. I would like to see more no huddle. And I don't know if there's just the thought that they just have to work slowly with this guy, but I'd like to think at some point Etling actually run no huddle in high school.
Well, it looked like they had a little bit more tempo yesterday at times.
At times, but I would like to – and it looked like it was good, but the problem is, and they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, it's to me, it's like kind of like that traditional Ohio State Woody Hayes playbook, 3 yards and a clot of dirt, and it just drives me nuts. You know, and when you're down, like when you're getting down to Ohio State by 15, you punt. Why? Go for it. I mean, just throw caution to the wind. You're 1-8. It's not like if you lose this game, you're gonna be knocked out of the BCS. This season's over in 2 weeks.
All right. Well, let's we're gonna start. Like I said, we're starting introducing Purdue basketball, Pacers at Colts. We're gonna throw in Purdue basketball here today. All right, they're 2 games into the season. A.J. Hammons came back this past game after being suspended for the first 3. Pops, you and I are talking about this. Non-conference, except for their tournament, where they'll play possibly Butler. They get Oklahoma State for sure, who's obviously a good team because they have what is probably a lottery pick in that guard Marcus Smart. Other than that, non-conference is, I don't want to say a joke to insult those teams, but...
What's a joke?
It's a joke. But I would assume you're thinking here that that's probably a good thing for a team that's, they brought in 3 freshmen, Jay Simpson's a redshirt freshman, they have 3 sophomores, blah, blah, blah. They have the 2 graduate student seniors and then they're 2 of their own seniors. So for a young team, I got to think this is a schedule you agree with.
Well, let's be politically correct. Let's say that they're playing an Urban Meyer pre-Big Ten season
that's,
schedule.
Yeah.
Okay? So, I mean... It's like homecoming you every week, all right? So, yeah, I think you need a line of schedule up where you win because I think I'm not going to say that Painter's under some pressure, but he's close. I would say his seat is starting to get a little warm. I don't think he could not – if he doesn't go to the NCAA tournament this year, then I think you're going to have people start saying, all right, what's going on? We spent all this money. You talked about recruiting. You've had 1 recruiting class that resulted in that run. And then since then, the recruiting has been spotty. And then last year was, and I continue to maintain, if Hummel had not gotten hurt, you would have 2 consecutive, not only below 500 seasons, but, you know, or actually we want to go term, you 2 seasons below 500. And I just, that's not what Purdue basketball should be about. I mean, they've always been the banner carrier here around here recently, generally speaking, under KD, other than when Tiller was here. But, yeah, I think you line up everybody, you know, that you figure you can win, and you get a couple teams that looks pretty good. You got one probably you're going to play in the Big Ten ACC tournament.
Boston College.
Well, you know, that's a luck of the draw. You probably ought to win that. But Oklahoma State, you could see how what you measure up at. But I think you need wins and get as many as you can. I'd like to see the Purdue football team do that and kind of reverting back. But I think I read somewhere that the Notre Dame schedule is going to be kind of – Notre Dame's not going to be on the schedule on a yearly basis. So I like that too because you just need to get wins. But back to that, I think the schedule's there for them to get probably 10-plus wins heading into the Big Ten, which you're probably going to need. But can they do it?
Well, it's worth noting that last year in the Big Ten, they tied with Minnesota and Illinois, who got in the tournament. The issue was that they struggled in the non-conference. They went like 7-6, 7-9. I can't remember. It was like 7-something. It was not very good, and that's what ultimately kept them out. But what have you seen so far this year, Tyler? Because the lineups don't seem completely set. Obviously, Hammond's everyone's counting on. I'm sure Painter was counting on to be a big cog of this offense. He gets suspended, and so Painter looks like he's sending a message because he only plays 17 minutes his first game back. And you have Jay Simpson, who's a redshirt freshman who would look pretty good in the exhibition season, and then you have the three freshmen. Eric Peck, the graduate senior, looks pretty good as a guy that you could use as a role player. I mean, Tyler, what are your thoughts so far a game in or two games in?
Oh, it's going to take time because the team's going to have to come together. And the question, I think, with Hammonds is, while it seems Painter has kind of given him that leash, I think the question is it because he believes it? Is it just for show and he'll eventually let it go? Or is Hammond just going to eventually not care and just get back to his ways? But what we've heard, I don't know, none of these is, I guess, substantiated fact, but from rumors is that Hammond's has been kind of, I guess this has been getting in his head a little bit, and he's been kind of thinking he's better than everyone and kind of doing what he wants. So I guess the question is Painter going to let him go off the leash after a while, or is Hammond just eventually not going to care anymore and just going to go, I'm going to do what I want, and you know, it's about my draft stock, not about this team.
That's what you and I have talked about many times, that while it's great to have someone at Purdue to be already in preseason talked about being an NBA lottery pick, these kids are young. And would he play in the team concept, or would he say, the hell with this, I'm going to get drafted, and you've already seen that. Problem is, I think the success of this team is probably going to be based on what Hammonds does. And, you know, while Simpson looks good, I question the outside shooting, and usually with a guy this big, the best way to run your offense is inside out to where Hammonds touches the ball, and then once he does that, he can draw enough attention that if you could put a couple shooters out, you know, around him at the three-point line, you should be able to get some good looks. And at the same time, Hammonds, if he's worked on his game and has gotten in better shape, should, you know, be one of the better centers in the Big Ten, if not the nation. And I have grave concerns. I've seen it too many times in the past for Gene Katie would go out and try to get more athletic guys that maybe they thought they could project to the NBA, and these guys just decide that they go on their own agenda. They get away from the team concept. They don't stay in the offense. They don't play defense. Then they get in trouble, and it's just kind of like then they decide, I'm not going with that. I'd just rather have guys that are hard workers versus more talent. So it's something to note. It's something to watch, and my guess is this will not be the first time Hammonds gets sat down or into it with Painter, unfortunately. I hope I'm wrong, but my gut feeling is this will not be the first time he's set out for a game.
Is this kind of a test for Painter? Because obviously, if the kid's an immature punk, not saying that Hammonds is, but if he is, it's kind of a loose situation already. But you have coaches, I mean, if you just look around this year, Krzyzewski and what's his face out of Kansas and Calipari, who just recruits freshmen. They don't seem to run into these issues where these kids don't. I mean, especially at Kentucky, you have all these lottery guys, and they don't really seem to run into this issue where it's just me. He seems to get them to work together as a team, even though these guys are all going to go top 10. So is this an indictment on Painter?
I think maybe it's because in Purdue's situation, it's kind of like you're seeing like the popular guy at the party of losers. I'm not saying it's like that, but it's like he's clearly kind of a step up.
Mr. Diplomatic.
I'm trying to say, like, what I'm saying is, like, it's like he's standing a little taller than everyone. At Kansas, everybody's at the same height. Like, the two and the five guy are clearly about the same. So they're like, I got to play because that guy will just go, I can't let these guys do it. So we all got to work together or we'll all not look good. Like, they can't all do it. And I think they realize that. because all of them are that good, basically.
Pops, do you think that's a factor?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd put it the way Tyler did. The guys are farting around. I'm with a bunch of bums. It's those places, especially at Palopari. The SO or the MO is this: either, you know, I can put you guys in the NBA, but you're going to have to work my way. And he runs an offense that way, and he runs defense that way. 2 years ago, it worked. He won NCAA tournament. Last year, it didn't work. They got an NIT. So that's the problem. You could get guys that aren't that good, or just really not good listeners. And clearly, Calipari's team last year, you could talk about injuries, but I think there was probably some other issues too. What struck me, and I wanted to watch the Duke and Kansas game, because that was Jabari Parker versus Wiggins, is that it would appear that both Krzyzewski for Duke and Self for Kansas, maybe he's buying into the Calipari model, which is you get these young, these freshmen in who are project to be NBA players, you play up-tempo, and to me it's like, as soon as you get over half court, whoever has the ball is open, and that kind of offense drives me crazy. But, I mean, that's what it looked like to me, and that might be the new trend. The problem is, you know, one, Purdue can't win against that. And so, I mean, that is a little disconcerting, considering from the national standpoint. But even just looking at the Big Ten, it does look like Izzo at Michigan State bought into that, because he has a large senior-based team, and I don't think Izzo will, because I think Izzo, he might get one or two, but
Gary Harris is, I think, going to leave after this year.
Okay, but he wasn't projected to be one of those guys that you signed, mm-hmm. that was a one and done is what I'm talking about.
I think there was a solid chance that people thought he was going to leave last year.
Okay, but I don't think so, but I'm talking about these guys that are legitimate NBA prospects that have everybody salivating and slobbering all over themselves to get them. That's not exactly what Michigan State's about.
No,
so,
you're right.
You know, for Purdue, this is like, you know, this is like you going out finding $1,000 bill, you know, all of a sudden and trying to be humble about it. It's so rare. I'll say it's rare, but it's an uncommon thing, because Painter's teams are based on, you know, guys that are not quite that talented but work hard. Now you get a guy, and most of them literally don't have a chance in the pros. And I mean, he did hit on a class, but those guys were all hard workers, and they're all basically role players. This guy could be drafted and start. I mean, in the lottery. I mean, you know, and it's been a while since Purdue had a lottery pick. So I don't know if Painter knows how to handle this. I don't know if the Purdue people know how to handle this. And the problem is I don't know if Hammonds, I question his ability to handle this and be mature and about this thing.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because in the article I wrote after he got suspended, that's what I said, is that for Hammonds and for Purdue, Hammonds means a lot more than the production on the court, because he could be the face of the team, the face of the university, especially, and I don't mean just like, hey, he's our best player, blah, blah, blah. I mean like someone you legitimately promote, because when has Purdue had a face to slap on the basketball team since Hummel left and since the Baby Boilers were here? It means so much, almost like an NBA team franchising him out, you know what I mean? Like, he's not just, hey, you're here at Purdue basketball, we're all hard workers, go on the court, let's get some W's, and everybody celebrates the team. He can legitimately be the face of Purdue basketball, and that, I think, is a good question to ask, if he can handle that.
That's what I'm saying. There's, you know, can he handle the expectations, and can he be productive? And, you know, that's the thing. Some can, some can't. Some teams, you know, that are expected to win can't deal with the expectations. Can Hammond handle it? You know, can he be mature? You know, will he at least be some part of this team, you know, and try to work in a team concept, or will this whole thing just go blow up in Painter's face? I don't know, you know, but I will say this, if he can at least be productive and maybe get them, the best thing he can do is, you know, put up his stats, but get his team into the NCAA tournament, because once you get in there, then you're even more spotlighted. But can they get there? I don't know, but my point I'm trying to get to, and I'm not really doing it, is the fact that if he can, it's going to be good for Purdue, you know, so because Painter's going to be able to go out and say, yep, we can bring you, go to some of these recruits, if we can bring you in here, you could play, and you can go to the NBA.
All right, let's move on to college football because we got to get to that before we wrap it up. We got to start with Auburn. Pops, you've seen the last play. I've seen the last play.
I saw the last play.
Tyler also saw the last play.
It was thoughts, amazing.
Tyler? I've already talked to Pops. I want to hear what you think about it.
The last play of the game.
Well, both.
I was not able to watch all the game, but I watched most of the first quarter. And if you watch that, you could see that Auburn has an offense that could win against Alabama in that they ran the ball and they just ate clock. Georgia didn't get on the field till like halfway through the first quarter. And then it was three and out. Auburn got the ball back. I think Auburn was able to run more clock out, gave it back to Georgia. Georgia did like three and out, punted it back. I mean, not only was the offense able to eat the clock, but Auburn's defense was legitimate against Georgia for a very long time and frustrated Murray. He was able to kind of bounce back and have a good game in the second half. But earlier on, you saw that, and I was watching, and I was like, holy crap. Like, I didn't realize Auburn's defense was this good, and the offense just went down the field. They were just standing there. It looked like basically Malzahn told them, take as long as you possibly can and just eat clock like nobody's business. Because they like the first drive was 16 plays, like 7-something. I mean, they got a field goal, and they were like on the 5. It seems like the problem, though, is they can't. Marshall really can't throw the ball that great. I mean, he's accurate, but I just don't know if they trust him. Because they run a pistol read option kind of thing, and they'll let him throw it, but they run it a lot.
Pops, let's get your thoughts in here, because you and I watched the first quarter or so, and I think Tyler's spot on what they ate the clock, because Georgia went out three and out twice, and I think that was basically the first quarter. It was 10-0.
You know, you could say all that, but there's a reason you play 60 minutes, and clearly Georgia made adjustments in the second half. This great vaunted, well, we can't do a damn thing against this Auburn defense, was obviously, you know, they gave up a lot of points and gave up three touchdowns. Then it really should have lost the game in the fourth quarter at home in a really meaningful game. And, you know, to me, that makes it, frankly, I could say that the football gods are basically smiling on Auburn, because otherwise they lose in this opportunity to go to have a really, really meaningful Iron Bowl versus Bama would be gone. See you later. We'll see you next year. Can they handle the pressure? You know, I mean, yesterday they almost choked on it. Yeah, they looked good in the first quarter, but they also looked as good as they looked in the first quarter. That's as bad as they looked in the fourth quarter, all right? And that's my question here. I just don't know. I mean, it's a nice story, and, you know, you're 10-1.
They're 9-1.
Okay, whatever. They've lost one game. The Bama game is meaningful, but I just think that from some of the things you saw in the first quarter to the fourth quarter, I think that Bama will be ready. And I think they will expose Auburn. I mean, it's a nice story. I just don't know if they could handle the pressure, because it looks like yesterday in the fourth quarter they couldn't. And the amount of pressure and publicity and notoriety that's coming in this Alabama-Auburn game is going to be huge.
Yeah, but can you just say that, you know what, Georgia's also in the SEC and a pretty good team, and two, sometimes to get to where you win a national championship or get to a game where it's super meaningful, you're going to need a break here or two. Now, I know you say a break, and that doesn't probably cover the pass, because it's absolutely ridiculous. This is the second time in, what, 2 weeks, is the Baltimore-Cincinnati game. Defensive backs knock the ball down, not up.
Well,
don't get the interception.
Northwestern lost a game,
that too. That's another prime
Nebraska
example. Yeah, knock the ball down. But you got to have a break every once in a while if you're going to have a special season. It's not like somebody goes 12-0 and it's not like they didn't have a lucky snap here or there.
Was it what you said? Luck is when
preparation
meets
opportunity.
Yeah, I guess.
Mean, Georgia
wasn't
prepared for it.
That was... Yeah, but
you could say that because they were told that they were not prepared to play that defense. Well, no one's gonna put it out on the line that Georgia's defense is top-notch. That, you could say... They did make adjustments, but are you going to tell me that if say the Auburn-Alabama game is almost kind of, not exactly, but that in the first half, Alabama tries to run in, Auburn's defense stops. Do you think Saban's going to be able to look McCarron in the eye and say, I need you to do what Murray did and throw 400 yards and like 4 touchdowns, and you just got to chuck it, and that's all we get, that's how we got to win? Do you think he could do that?
Yes, because I saw semblances of that when they were in A&M.
Okay, you basically brought up against the worst defense of the world, okay?
Since you want to finish my thoughts, what else am I thinking here?
Well, obviously, that was like, they have such a terrible defense.
Now you're rationalizing.
They have such a bad defense. I'm saying you be realistic.
I am being realistic. They got blitzed. Auburn got blitzed in the fourth quarter and really should have lost the game. And they're going. And this Alabama, I'll tell you right now, has got a lot better running game than what Georgia does. And Saban is not going to go away from it. All right, he might divert. But you saw it against LSU. It's just pound the rock, going to wear you down. And at the fourth quarter, then you start getting 8 and 10 yard gashes where the defense is down. That's what I'm saying. I mean, I don't know how good the defense is. Were they just playing on emotion in the first quarter? Possible.
All right, well, we got to move on from this, but Pop sounds less convinced that the Bama can lose. Tyler, more convinced, less convinced? Because it's going to be in Auburn. We already talked about that.
I'm more convinced, especially because you say Bama will pound the rock. Auburn will pound the rock too. They will take it Saban all day long. Malzahn's not afraid to run the crap out of the ball. And right. No one's going to say that Auburn has way less talent than Alabama. It's pretty close.
All right, we're going to move on here. We got to talk about Baylor. I want to talk about Baylor before we do our picks in our top four. They dropped 63 on Texas Tech and win by about 40 points. They get Oklahoma State this week, which is obviously a no-brainer, going to be a pick because it's 5-12. They're number five, Stanford lost. Ohio State, nobody here in this room will be convinced of anyway. Are they going to jump Ohio State?
Yes. They should. I mean, come on. They won by 40 points.
I know, because we talked about this last week, and you said if they get Michigan State, which it looks like that's who they're getting in the Big Ten who's ranked, but Illinois, IU to wrap up the season, Purdue was one of their last games, too.
Ooh.
Is Michigan State enough to save them if Baylor drops 60 on Oklahoma State? They get Texas still. They get TCU, who are all top 25 in there.
If they win, yes, but I don't think we're going to say that. Wow, okay. No, he's got to talk. He's got to do all the talking now.
No, I mean, I'd like to get in here, but go ahead.
No, it's my turn to talk. Well, theoretically, yes, if they can win, but I don't think anyone's convinced that they could win.
You're talking about Baylor?
Theoretically, if Michigan State and Ohio State play, could Michigan State save Ohio State? Yes, but that's only if they win. No one's going to exactly say it's 100% that they're going to win.
Well, I think that'd be a good game. Pops, thoughts?
No one says 100% anybody's going to beat anybody.
Like you've basically said 100% on a lot of things.
That's my thought. I'm not saying it's 100%.
You're the one saying
win.
It, so don't say
that's
no one said
that's my thought.
No.
I'm not saying it's a confirmed definitive. I don't know. I thought last week maybe that Stanford was going to jump Ohio State just because of the schedule, and that didn't happen in the BCS. So, I mean, I don't know. Just, you know, I don't think they take into consideration how much you beat somebody. So I would say probably for this week Ohio State will remain third. But considering what Baylor potentially has down the road, that they could jump them. But all this could be meaningless if Bama and Florida State went out. And then they're just trying to get the Miss Congeniality Bowl where they play a game that just doesn't mean much of anything. So,
well, I understand. I just think that we, for pretty much the entire season, we've said Ohio State's overrated. And Baylor has an exciting offense. It is now getting into the meat of their schedule, and it's still not slowing them down. And that's the only reason I bring it up. All right, we got to do our top four and our picks before we wrap this up. So, Pops, your top four.
Bama, Florida State, Ohio State, and Auburn.
That is the first time I think Ohio State's been in there. Tyler.
I'm going Bama, Florida State, Auburn, Baylor.
Those are my four. All right, we got to do our picks. Baylor, Oklahoma State, it's 5-12. Texas A&M at LSU.
Yeah, sure. I hate Manziel, so let's pick that game.
And then got to go Denver, New England.
At New England. Denver at New England.
Sure. Should be me.
All right, those will be our three picks for this week. Check out for those tomorrow. And that's going to do it for the Triple Option. Make sure to check us out on iTunes. All of the podcasts download automatically, so you can find those there for free. You can go to 3sportsguns.com, click on the About page to find the QR scanner for the Android app. And, of course, check out the Facebook page, the Twitter account, Take the Pitch is the tag, and 3sportsguns for the article. So for the podcast this week, that's going to do it. I'm Blair Gunther.
Tyler Gunther.
Nick Saban.
Watch out for the pitch.